Hello, welcome to this week's episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Thanks for joining us. Sorry it's been a while since the last show, but we're back. If you enjoy this show, or any of the shows for that matter, we'd love a review on iTunes. If you can post that, we'd be really grateful. Now, this week's show is with James T. Now, James is a former international 1500 meter runner. We talk about what it takes to compete at that level, and how he competed in a period where there was probably a lot of rampant drug taking going on in the sport. We also talk about his current training arrangements. So he's coaching down at Cardiff. We talk about what he's doing there, the athletes that are training with him, and how they're training. Here we are. So James, what sparked your initial interest in running?
Oh, crikey. I need to go back in the memory banks for that. It's been many years. So I started when I was kind of in primary school. There were the kind of school races, and I kind of remember enjoying those, you know, back in the day many years ago. And then secondary school, I was lucky enough to have some really supportive PE teachers that took us for runs, and we went to all the competitions. And the natural progression when I was 12 was to kind of join the local club. And so I'm a product of the British kind of club system. And I always felt that I really enjoyed the individual nature of running. But there was also, you know, it was a slight team element to it as well when you did cross country and when you went away with, you know, different team events. And it just kind of suited me and suited my personality.
Yeah. So you've been at it for a good sort of 20, 25 years now, do you think?
Well, probably going on sort of 27 years now. Yeah. So long time.
What do you think it is about running that's kind of kept your interest for that long? Because that's quite a long time to be actively involved in the sport as you have been.
Yeah, I think it's just the... It's just such an honest way to challenge yourself and to test yourself. And I really did get the mentality that, you know, what you put in was pretty much what you got out. And actually, sometimes you didn't quite get out what you put in, but then you'd try again and do something slightly different. And I think that the individual nature of having to go out, you know, when the weather was rotten and then test yourself on, you know, on a big day or in a race or something, I think that really got to me and you know, kind of ingrained in me from a young age. And then because there's always something next, you know, if you do cross country, then it's onto the track season, and then there was always a few road relays even at a young age, and then you're back in again. And it just, even if you hadn't had a bad, even if, sorry, if you had a bad season somewhere, it was always the next one, and you were always challenging yourself again.
Yeah. And have you always been interested, being a coach now, have you always been interested in kind of monitoring yourself and adapting and trying to coach yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I always took an interest in what my coaches when I was younger, so the coaches that were at my clubs. And then I had a proper coach from the age of 14 who was Tom Watson, from 14 to 20, and he was very scientific and also gave me a bit of background into, you know, took me to get, you know, physiological testing. I remember spending a lot of time in Harrow at the British Olympic Medical Centre there. And even from a young age, I just loved the numbers. And then, you know, you try and go back and the next time try and see if your numbers had improved. Obviously, hopefully your racing had improved in between. But I kind of started to see the relationship between training science, but trying to link the two together. And that was from a really young age.
Yeah. And you had a lot of success indoors as an athlete. But what was your... I mean, as well, you spoke about doing the cross country and the track. What was your sort of strengths? What did you most enjoy doing back when you were training and racing as an athlete?
Yeah, I mean, when I was 18, 19, I kind of was the classic cross country runner that did sort of 3,000s on the track. And sort of by accident, I kind of became a 1500 meter runner when I had a rotten 3K and didn't qualify for the English schools over 3K how I planned. I qualified over 1500 and ended up winning the English schools 1500. And that was it from basically about the age of 18, 19. I was a 1500 meter runner. And my stride is quite short and I don't really use my arms. And I kind of found the indoors kind of suited my style. And I always loved the hustle and bustle of racing. I mean, I love the physical nature of racing. And indoors is just that. It's that environment where, you know, it's a lot about tactics. It's a lot about racing on your feet in terms of, or thinking on your feet. And it coincided that the place I'm sat in now, NIAC, which is the National Indoor Athletics Centre in Cardiff, was actually built in 2000 in my third year at university. And I kind of sort of learned my trade on, it's still the only campus-based track in the UK, whereas every university in the US pretty much has their own bank track. So I kind of almost learned it, you know, and learned how to train on it, learned how to run it. You know, I was always better prepared than anyone else indoors. The fact that I suffered severely from allergies, so whenever I went outdoors, I could never breathe properly anyway. So that's indoors, there's no grass indoors, so I was always good in the indoor season.
Yeah, and you came as high as fourth, didn't you, in the World Indoor Championship?
Yeah, I mean, I had a bit of a purple patch in sort of 2004, 2005, and yeah, I mean, I look back and fourth in the World Championships, and then the next year I was sixth in the Europeans in a pretty stacked European field as well. So yeah, I think it's I look back with pride and think that I got pretty close to some, you know, some international medals, maybe at a time when who knows if I was playing in a fair field or not.
Yeah. Do you think about that still? Do you still wonder if the guys in front of you were running clean?
Well, I mean, there was that, I think it was Daily Telegraph or Times, I can't remember what it was, article last year, and it kind of had a timeline of when, which events and which was the dirtiest times for the sports. And I think in that period of sort of 2002 to 2005, in endurance events, in men's endurance events, it was the most rampant time for doping. And I remember showing my wife saying, well, look, I came fourth when this was happening. So either the guys that were taking the drugs weren't taking very good ones, or I ran pretty well that year. But then if I look back and think about my progression as an athlete, I finished fourth in that World Indoors, and then I missed the Olympics by a fraction of a second actually going to the Olympics. But after that, the next year, I remember going to Madrid, which was the European champs, and having finished fourth in the Worlds the year before, nothing less than a medal was, you know, I was going there to get a medal. And I remember a Ukrainian guy running away from the field, running 3:35, looking super easy. And then three Spaniards took the other places. And then a Belgian guy picked me on the line for fifth place. And I ran 3:40, which indoors 3:40 is pretty good in the final. I remember coming off the track just literally in the daze of just, I'd done everything. I was in the best shape of my life, and I couldn't get my head around that I hadn't got a medal. And I remember going then to Albuquerque training. I remember battering every run, every session, and I did that for the next, I don't know, however long. And I think looking back, you know, I was chasing something maybe that was closer than it was, but because of the nature of the sport at the time, and some of the qualifying for champs was just ridiculous. I mean, they're easier now than they were. You look at Edmonton World Champs qualify, it was 3:34 to go to the World Champs that year, whereas now, you know, it's back to 3:36. But if you think about 10 years or, you know, 14 years previously, it should have been 3:37 potentially, which a lot of us back then, that was attainable and that would have been a stepping stone. But something went amiss, and there was a jump in times and performances, and I think that a lot of people, and you speak to a lot of athletes, they, clean athletes, were trying too hard, and unrealistic expectations of funding and races, and not being able to get in races either because of, you know, doped up athletes that were taking these places. And yeah, I think I would have had a better career when I was almost at my peak if I'd have been on it. Well, maybe if I had a world medal, I'd have had, you know, another few K in the bank account. I'd have had a better contract. I'd have been, you know, probably a more sought after athlete. But who knows? Maybe that's me making wrong assumptions. But I mean, I'm just going off what I'm told and what I read, and what I felt about it at the time. So I think if you can't said that Madrid, I just came off. I couldn't put my finger on what I was doing wrong. But who knows?
Yeah, and they've never really uncovered that Spanish controversy, have they, with the those blood bags that they've since destroyed all the evidence for, or they've taken all the evidence for, or something. It's hard to take when they're hiding evidence as well as.
Well, it is, and some of those athletes one of the athletes that beat me in that Madrid race was named, you know, as one of those people linked to that operation. Who knows? I mean, he might be totally innocent, you know, but I just always think that there's, you know, if there was nothing to hide, why were those destroyed, and why was there a report? But again, I don't think that timeline's gone now, because the old 10-year window, those guys are, they can celebrate now because they've obviously, yeah, if they did cheat, they've got away with it. So
yeah. And what do you think now as a coach? Because you're coaching athletes with pretensions of making games and of competing internationally. Do you think the situation's better now, despite all the controversy about drugs busts and doping? Do you think, are you more confident sending your athletes into international competition that they're entering a fair playground?
Oh, I think if you look at some of the global powers and you look at championships, you know, major championships now, compared to say 10 years ago, I mean, you know, there were some, you know, real standout performances. You know, I mean, you know, you look at the performances of someone like Michael East back in Athens, absolutely phenomenal. But you look at athletes now, you know, if Michael was around now, I think Michael would have been, you know, would have been up there with Shen Suez in the Olympic final this year, given the quality and given the championship nature of it. So I think that athletes coming through the system now, I think it's as clean and as fair as it has been, but there's still room for improvement. We're still getting a report a day, aren't we? A report a week of another athlete that failed from London. And we were told that was the cleanest games ever, and that was only 4 years ago. So it's not a huge timeline ago. But I do feel more confident. I think athletes should definitely be more confident that the environment. I just think there's definitely more transparency, but there's still a long way to go. But again, if athletes do run or worry about what other people are doing, then they're probably in it. Or they can't control that. So I think you've just got to kind of worry about what you're doing. And it goes back to the reason why I started running in the first place, which was to see what I could do myself, and where that ends up taking you and what that ends up, you know, producing is individual to you. You can't really worry about what other people are doing.
Yeah. And how big is your group now at Cardiff? Are you coaching both the uni team, but also are you working with the local club, or have you got a group that's left uni now?
Yeah, I mean, I never sort of link myself to a club because I've got athletes from so many different clubs. I've kind of always had the university guys obviously coming through the system here at Cardiff Met. But then we have a good group of the Cardiff University guys that jump in with our sessions. Have some fantastic alumni athletes that have come through the system here, the Tom Marshalls, Yain Thomases, Charlotte Arters, that were students here. They all went to the US and did their MAs. Over in the US and came back and relocated to Cardiff, which is great. And then there's guys that, you know, there's the likes of someone like Charlotte Green, who lives in Bristol but drives across for training, for sessions. And we have guys that are just, you know, full-time workers in the city or around the vicinity that jump in. So there's a real mix and match. It's a nice blend of people.
And is it like you're dealing with, obviously, with a range from people like Michael Kallenberg, who's running just over marathons, he's running 50Ks and stuff. But you're also, like you said, mentioned Tom Marshall there, who is a very quick 1500-metre runner. Was he ranked in the top 20 in the UK or even lower than that this year? Do you have a philosophy that runs through all their training, or do you have to be really specific with these guys about what kind of stuff they're doing and how they're approaching
it? Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, and it gives me a headache a lot of the time trying to link it together. I mean, Tom Marshall's wife, Kat Marshall, she was part of the New Zealand Commonwealth Games 400 meter squad, and she stepped up to 800. I mean, in the summer she ran 2:02 for 800, and she can also run, you know, 54 seconds of 400 meters in training. So someone like her obviously is on the speed element of or spectrum of the training. You're right. And then you've got a Mike Kallenberg that ran in Doha and came sixth in the world 50K championships last week. And, you know, he's running over marathon distance. But there are kind of fundamentals, as even from an 800 metre female athlete to a Mike Kallenberg, that there's fundamentals that, you know, that they can fit into time of year. Obviously, the breakdown in the week is going to be slightly different. The frequency, the you know, duration, the intensity is going to be different as well, but there are links you can make. I mean, certain sessions, the more speed guys can dip in and out and do either slightly less distance on the reps, or they can do every other rep as well, but just a bit more quality. Sometimes that works really well with some of the female runners, because obviously they can run a bit quicker but chase the guys that are running more reps in the middle as well. And a 1500 meter guy needs a 10K engine this time of year, and a marathon guy always needs to touch base with their 10K kind of engine to be, you know, to be as efficient, and both of them 5K as well. So there's fundamentals that I think are, you know, across pretty much all events, but it's that as you kind of get more towards that kind of, you know, 5 weeks, 6 weeks before comp, then you have to go very specific to what that aim and what that need of that athlete and event group is, because yeah, it needs to tailor to that individual. But yeah, it's a fun one trying to balance it. I don't always get it right. I like to think, you know, we get it right more than we get it wrong. If you've got to do the fundamentals right, and there's not a magic wand to anything. It's just principles of training done pretty much day in, day out, twice a day, most days. And then that individual kind of, you know, centered approach to the athletes at certain times, that's key.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, so having had the experience of being like an international athlete, but also you're running on the club scene as well, you're doing the kind of, you know, club runners, you're coaching guys who are maybe not at that top level, but you're pushing hard and they're running, you know, 31-minute 10Ks or lower. Is there, like, kind of a huge difference? Like, from what you said there, it seems to be it's just about, you know, this, doing the basic things right and keeping it going and eventually it will come. Or is there something you think you need to do to take yourself to that next level, sort of to become an international class runner?
Yeah, there's a number of things you can do. I mean, you know, often, you know, the you know, your individual talent or ability might hold you back if, you know, certain aims. But I do think, again, you know, you could say that someone like Mike Kallenberg, and when he came to university, he was, you know, he was a 16:30 or 16:50 5K guy. And he really did just knuckle down and do everything. Someone like Charlotte Arthur, who came here as a 10:16 3K runner, but just did things day in, day out really well, and just stuck to what they needed to do and stuck to a plan. And I think the biggest thing for me is that you kind of, as a whatever distance you're running, that you need to train at that distance. So if you're a 10K runner, you've got to spend time running 10K pace. Same with a 5K guy, but to actually really maximise, you've got to become better at the distances below, and then you've got to be able to run the distances above to a decent level as well, or at least be proficient in training. I think that's something that, you know, we kind of make sure that in a kind of 2 or 3 week cycle that you touch upon, you know, as I said, you know, a bit below, a bit at, and a bit above race pace. So you become sort of a, you know, more rounded athlete and better leg pace for the lower distances, and better endurance and a better engine for the longer. And also then you know exactly what the actual race pace. Be surprised how many people you ask, you know, they're going into a race about trying to run a personal best in a distance, and you ask them how much time they've spent running at that pace, and they haven't. They've either run, you know, super fast underneath it, or they've run super slow above it, or they've just spent so much time at just that one goal pace that they don't have any sort of range, you know, above or below.
Yeah. And with kind of one thing I'm finding quite interesting is kind of speaking to the guys that Steve Vernon coaches, who we've had on a previous show, is he a lot of his sort of the non-specific work, so if he's not doing a session or he's not doing a tempo run, a lot of the other stuff is very steady, and he almost tries to hold the athletes back on his on the more steady and the easier pace miles. What kind of your thoughts on that? Do you, if someone's out for a longer run, it probably more like a club runner, would you recommend kind of running at a much more comfortable pace, just at a normal, on your normal steady miles or on your longer marathon style runs?
Yeah, I think you get certain athletes that they can cope with steady running. Mike Kallenberg is a great example that his steady running, 6 minute miling, is for him jogging along. A 1500 meter runner that's trying to always, put volume in, but, you know, always trying to run steady, that hasn't got a great bit of conditioning, might not be able to do that. So I think it's individual to the person. I think that because there's certain sessions that we do that are quality, that we make the hard days hard, and the easy days should be easy, but the pace they actually run is totally different to them. I mean, and that's, you know, probably the same across, you know, distance running across the world. You're going to look at the Kenyans and the Ethiopians, and they're jogging at times in days in between sessions, but certain runs they'd start jogging, and then by the end of it they're getting, you know, inside 5 minute mile pace at you know, high altitude. So there's it's so individual to the person. I think as long as that person is not fatiguing themselves, because the classic old club runner would be running hard every single day. And I think if you end up doing that, that you will end up slightly fatigued unless you're conditioned to cope with that. So I don't think there's one golden rule that you must either run steady in your runs in between, or you must run super, super easy. I'm quite a believer that you start off easier, and then if you do feel better on a run, you can always, it's always better to finish a run feeling, you know, fresher and clipping along than it is to go out the door at a hard tempo and end up having to back it off or run less, and then you almost feel like you're fatigued then for the rest of the day. So, but it's massively individual to the person and what their background is, training years, and all the other info that goes with that.
Yeah, and obviously it's going pretty well for the group. There's you guys. Well, the Cardiff Athletics Club team won the 6-stage road relay a couple of months ago. So obviously a lot of those guys that are in the team are from your training group, presumably.
Yeah, we fantastic day in Sutton Park. I was lucky enough in 1999 to win the national 6-stage with a group that we all trained together, the likes of Christian Stevenson, Andreas Jones, Dickie Gardner, and there was a huge group of us that used to run together, and we won the 6 days then. So to see guys that, you know, four of them that, you know, I've coached for a while now, and then Carwin Jones, who jumps in with our Tuesday sessions here and does long runs with the guys, and then a guy that, a Cardiff born lad, Rowan Axe, who's based at St Mary's now. So to see the six of them take on it, and they ended up taking on Swansea. So you couldn't have written it. So you had John Hopkins, who left Cardiff in the summer to join Swansea, was on last leg. Tom Marshall, who was one of the first athletes that I started coaching, had a few, I think, 3-second lead with the last leg. John called him, and then Tom just sat in. And I remember the kind of cut through, which is about 400 metres to go. Tom didn't know it was me, but I just shouted at him, 3:39, 3:39. 3:39, which was the time he ran for 1500 metres in the summer. Knowing that, bless him, John could probably hear that as well. And I think John ran a PB of 3:52 in the summer. But it's a fantastic steeplechaser. I mean, sub 8:40 steeplechaser. But I kind of knew then, if you're playing with almost 100 metres over 1500 metres, then when that final turn, barring disaster, that Tom should have and did sprint away for victory. But fantastic, fantastic effort by Swansea. But nice that we took gold, and our B team was the first B team, and then the women got a national bronze as well, with Charlotte Arter third fastest overall. So it's one of those days as a kind of group and a coach that you can smile and think that was a good day at the office.
And what's your like plans as a coach now? You've obviously got a fairly big group. Are you looking to take on more, or are you, is your hands full with what you've got with new runners coming into university and
Yeah, I mean, like already had loads of messages about next year for the university, different students coming in. Had a nice feature in Athletics Weekly that helps promotion with things like that. I mean, I've got a great team here of the current guys, and also got some great support through Welsh Athletics as well. Chris Jones down here in his endurance position has been great. He's given me a lot of guidance and helped me a lot with Charlotte Arter as well and Jade Williams. In terms of just coordinating things, so it's nice to have people that I can get advice on, because again, it's not, you know, I'm learning things. I went to Oslo for the European Endurance Conference a couple of weeks back, and you learn, you know, new stuff and kind of develop things that you, and sometimes it tells you what you've been doing is right, and you're doing it for a reason. So I mean, yeah, I mean, continue developing the guys I've got, but yeah, massively, you know, we've got a great team here at Cardiff Met, and that's something that, yeah, I mean, that's my day job, that's who pays my bills. And that's where my coaching started here, really. I mean, I started out as a volunteer coach here, coaching the guys and girls that no one else wanted to coach. And that was a great, great kind of sort of start point, because you kind of learn your trade. So, it's an exciting future here. We've got great facilities. We've got a team, actually, for Bucks Cross this year, that if everyone's healthy, we might give St Mary's, Birmingham, I think we could maybe do a 6-stage version there. So it's super exciting. I mean, I'd love us to think about us being, you know, over cross country mentioned in the same breath as those guys, and I think that will happen in the next few years for sure.
Yeah, because it's we're having like a real purple patch, I guess, with particularly with men's and women's kind of endurance athletics, which is really good. I don't know if you have any thoughts about why that's happening. Do you know why we're kind of, especially Scotland, I guess, is producing like a good volume of athletes at the moment?
Oh, Scotland, I mean, unbelievable in terms of, you know, their athlete development and, you know, but not just one event group, you know, from men, women, 800 up to marathon, absolutely phenomenal. I think in Britain, you know, it's number of years. I always think about things always going cycles and, you know, there was always that feeling that, you know, when we didn't have quite the success on the world stage, could be back to what we were discussing earlier about it being a level playing field, which I do think it is a lot more now. You know, if you look at things like the 5K and the 10K and marathon, that, you know, I definitely think it's, you know, more of a level playing field, so our guys can compete. But I do think that, you know, you cycles, things don't naturally just always continue for forever the same like level they were. And those runners that we had in the 80s, you know, 70s, 80s, that this could just well be that natural resurgence of that. And I do think when you see Andrew Bouchard is a great example of someone that other athletes can really relate to. And when you saw him going on the shoulder of Mo with three laps to go in the Olympic final, here's a guy that, you know, I remember when he equaled Yian Thomas's national 12-stage first leg time, and they were the two fastest guys at the national relays, I think it was like 3 years ago. And then thinking, oh, bloody hell, who's this guy? Like, I'd never even heard of him. Going on, you know, like, oh, gutted, you know, because... you know, they both, you know, got a medal each. But I was thinking, I never even heard of him. I remember going on Para 10 and going, actually, you know, he's quite good. But and then seeing his progression since, absolutely mind blown. But that, I mean, that should, you know, to our athletes coming through and our junior men coming through, you know, and Laura Muir as well. I remember her running here, in Nyack in a 1500 for Scottish schools or Scottish juniors, and I remember seeing this gutsy girl running, you know, and you know, winning, and she's just, you know, she, you know, she doesn't look any different to a lot of her other athletes coming through, but she's just guts and hard work, and Andy Young, her coach, has done a great job. I think that we've got, you know, real role models, and obviously Mo at the top of the tree that athletes can aspire to. And I think that having those kind of positive role models, I think if kids are seeing that they're at these races that these guys are at, and they're trying to qualify for the same teams, I think it's only a real healthy thing. And I think that success and that kind of breaking down the barriers to what it takes to be an international athlete, that it's not that far apart. I mean, that a lot of our kids could make it.
So I've got three quick fire questions to ask. The first of which is, if you could only wear one make and model of running shoes ever again, what would they be?
Well, I'm loving the Saucony Triumph. I was a Nike guy back in the day, so they're very, very similar to the Pegasus. But yeah, it's the Triumph for me.
Okay. And if you could recommend one either book, film, podcast, or magazine or article, what would you recommend to the listener?
Oh, that's a really tough one. I've always been a great buyer of a collector of running bios. No bugles, no drums. The story of Peter Schnell is a good one.
Perfect. And the last one is, in your opinion, what's been the greatest athletics performance or endurance performance of all time?
Oh, of all time. That's a real tough one. I think, crikey, let's have a think. Really put me on the spot. I think watching and seeing David Rudisha run 140.9 in the Olympic final for 800 metres. You look at how many pace races there are out there for those distances. But to do that in the Olympic final, I think that I don't think you can get any better than that, can you?
No, it's pretty amazing. Didn't every single person in that race run a PB or
something? 143.8 got your last or something ridiculous.
Yeah, crazy.
Imagine running that. What'd you run? 143. Where did you come? Last. In the Olympic final, though. So, yeah, pretty amazing.
Perfect. Well, nice one. Good luck with your athletes. Hopefully not for the 12 stage in April. Are we defending champions for that, Highgate? Yeah. Okay.
We've already started talking about it. So
thanks a lot for your time, man.
Pleasure talking to you, Sean. Take care, fella.